Welcome to Formula Wolf on Food and Wine. I'm Tony Foreman.
And Chef Cindy Wolf.
And Cindy, I've been waiting for this program.
Mm-hmm.
Waiting. Calculating. We're going to talk about your favorite topic, vegetables.
That's right. You know it. You know it.
Oh, yeah. You are the baby of your family.
Yes. Do we have to talk about that?
Yes.
All right. Yes.
It influences the way you feel about vegetables.
Is that?
And the kind of stuff you would get away with when you were a kid.
All I can say is my poor mother. And man, did my dog eat a lot of vegetables.
Oh. Good Lord.
Oh, there were a lot of
vegetarian dog.
There were a lot of ways to dispose of vegetables.
If you're a listener and you have a vegetarian dog, please email us at formalwolf@wypr.org.
Well, and also the thing is that I grew up in that family where you sat at the table until your plate was clear. And you had to put everything on your plate. So, yeah, there was a lot of TV watching going on while Cindy was still at the dinner table with the cold peas in front of her, which I now love. But, oh, boy, when I was a kid, it was green beans and nothing else. It's hard to believe I'm a chef. That child turned into a chef.
There are moments.
So there is hope for that child of yours that doesn't eat their vegetables, that they may become a chef someday. See? It's a good story.
Oh, my.
Well.
I remember when you didn't like cilantro.
Yeah. Well,
which is not a vegetable. It's an herb.
Right. Well, yeah, I didn't. And I didn't like olives. I didn't like a lot of things.
So.
Until we started eating really good ones.
Yes.
That's different.
That's the moral of the story.
The moral of the story is, yeah.
When I was a kid, I have a confession. When I was a kid.
Yes.
What I didn't hate. Almost everything. What did I hate? Broccoli.
Huh.
Worse than anything.
Okay.
Worse than poison, as they say. Broccoli. I was in the hospital one time when I was a kid.
Uh-huh.
My brother and my father came in, and they gave me a card. And the card had in it broccoli seeds. I thought it was the best joke ever. But I love it now. I get really good broccoli.
Yes. Well, also, when we were kids, we were probably eating some frozen or canned vegetables.
A lot of times.
So that was also your...
My daughter calls them little trees.
We have little
trees, Dad. Now she's big. She's 3 and a half. She says broccoli, but she used to say little trees.
Yeah, I like little trees.
So I asked you to prepare a list.
Yes.
Of the vegetables that you love.
I did. You know what's at the top of it?
What?
Corn. It was the first thing that came to my mind. I love corn.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, I liked corn when I was a kid, too.
You think...
Well,
living
also growing
in Indiana,
up, I was
going to
say, growing up in Indiana didn't exactly. That's some of the best corn ever.
Corn is on my list.
Okay.
So what in the heck do you like to do with corn?
Oh, my gosh. All kinds of things.
Now, I made two lists. One, stuff I like to cook, and then two,
I didn't do that.
Stuff I like to eat.
I just did the like to eat thing.
You're the baby, like I said.
I like to cook the things that I like to eat. With corn, so many different things. I mean, I remember when we first opened... We would make corn fritters, and boy, I thought about that the other day. I haven't thought of those in a long time, and that batter was a little, definitely, you know, we do a lot with beignet batter now, which is actually, you like to say, more like a tempura batter, which is true. A beignet batter can be pretty floury, doughy, if you will, but we used to make fritters with corn and green onion, and we put a little bit of diced shrimp in. Oh my goodness, those were good, but I mean, there's nothing better than roasting, well, the way that I cook corn is I roast it in the husk at 350 degrees for about, it takes between 30 and 35 minutes. And you just have to check the corn to make sure that it is cooked. And you can just pull the husk
back. In the husk.
And that's the way it's been done forever. You know, I mean, that used to be cooked in the embers of fire that way. And it's just heightens the natural sugar content, which is one of the reasons why we like corn so much. It has a very high sugar content. And it just realizes that. And it's just a really great way to eat corn, and it smells so good when it's roasting, and I'm sure the husk perfumes the air a little bit as well. But, you know, another little bit more interesting thing to do is to make spoon bread, which is traditionally Southern and something I've adapted over time into a recipe that, you know, traditionally something like spoon bread would have been eaten on a sideboard or a hunt board, whatever you want to call it, in your dining room. If you did have people making food for you and people you know, serving you basically, you would have helped yourself to breakfast. And so a lot of those dishes would have been made in just large pans and you would have spooned it out. So spoon bread literally was something that you could spoon out, and it had corn and eggs and typically polenta or cornmeal in it, and a little bit of, it might have been sweet, it might have had sugar in it, but typically it was savory and would have had salt and maybe a little bit of pepper, and just a really simple, and milk, of course, and a very simple dish, and can be as light as you want it to be. And that's something that I've adapted to. Basically, it's polenta cooked down with cream with a little bit of salt, maybe a tiny little bit of chicken stock, and adding the eggs, whole eggs in, after it's cooled down a little bit, and then folding in corn, or I would puree the corn into the cream and strain it. And that's a really fine way of making it. So you can sort of go as rustic and as hearty as you want it to be, or as fine as you want it to be. But that's one of my favorite things. And also I make corn chowder, which has whole grain mustard in it. So it helps to balance out the acidity, the sweetness of the dish, of the soup. So a little bit of smoke in it as well, a little bit of crispy bacon in a very fine dice, and tasso ham, which also helps to season the soup, and lots of corn, maybe a little bit of onion, but I don't put it in, but you could. And as I said, finish with a little bit of whole grain mustard, a little bit of chicken stock. Really yummy soup. When it comes down to it, corn is inexpensive, really available, and particularly, I mean, where we live, when it's fresh, when you can buy it from a local farm, and hopefully it's just been pulled from the field, oh my gosh, that sugar content is high, and it's really a wonderful treat.
Yeah, getting it immediately, mm-hmm. getting into the restaurants immediately, that's a...
It's a big deal.
It's a big deal.
I remember when I first started working with Butch Lanassa here, he has a produce company, which was his father's before him, and he and I were talking about corn, and he was stressing the importance of, because I had just moved here from D.C., stressing the importance of getting it right out of the field. And he was the first person that really ever said that to me. I mean, I always knew it, but I never really thought about it, I have to admit.
When you were a kid, how many ears of corn could you eat?
I was two. My brother, I mean, I tell you, man, I think I could eat like 10, but I remember I would try and eat one. And, you know, I always wanted to, you know, you always try to keep up with your siblings. And he was a lot older than me,
Clark,
too.
Clark and I could knock out a dozen between us.
Wow.
We loved it a lot.
The story of a hollow leg was definitely my brother. My brother was super, well, we were all thin as kids, but, I mean, he was super thin. And that man, that guy could eat. I mean, we would have shrimp for dinner, and we were lucky if we got any. I mean, it would just, that was one of my favorite summertime dishes. My mom would steam shrimp, and we'd have, well, I'm thinking of it because we would have corn on the cob invariably with the steamed shrimp, and we'd have either drawn butter or cocktail sauce, and it would just, he would just put it away. But yeah, it's, we also had dinners where we predominantly ate corn, which was very unusual for my mother because we always had to have balanced meals with proper vegetable and meat and, you know, all starch and all kinds of stuff. So it was kind of fun
except when we got to sit down
and eat corn.
Yeah,
it was like
no question.
Picnic fun treat thing.
The one that I go back to now all the time is, you know, roasting in the oven, as mm-hmm. Exactly as you said,
mm-hmm.
And then putting it on a grill.
Oh,
especially if yeah. I can get it on a wood grill.
Oh, that's nice.
Roll it around.
Still in the husk or out of the husk?
Out of the husk.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Get a little char.
Yeah.
And then dress it with chimichurri.
Oh, now you're talking my language.
Super duper good.
Okay, very good.
You can have it on the husk that way. You can cut it off
corn
the husk that way.
Corn and chimichurri. Perfect.
It's great.
Yummy.
It's great. So that's kind of, that's
and
what's
there's so
on
many
my
different,
brain.
There's so many different ways to make chimichurri too, so you can pretty well adapt it too.
Yeah, the version that I'm liking the best these days is a lot of cilantro and parsley and a little basil and anyway.
Okay.
All right, so move on from corn. What else is on your list?
Parsnips.
Parsnips.
I love parsnips, which I also use
parsnips.
To hate.
You have to use the higher pitch voice when you say it.
They're so much fun to just make even chips out of. Peel them.
Parsnip chips.
Peel them, slice them super thin, fry them in corn or peanut oil until they're golden at 350 degrees. It only takes like a minute or two. And when they come out, hit it with a little salt. And the fun thing about that, too, would be to add carrot chips, potato chips, you know, just make this whole fun celeriac chips, whole fun thing of
do you make a
root vegetable chips.
A dip for these chips?
Nope. I don't think it needs it.
All right. We'll keep going through your list. So.
All right. Cauliflower. Oh, my gosh. I'm in love with cauliflower.
I like cauliflower. Yo.
I even think I liked cauliflower when I was a kid, now that I think about it, but maybe not. Maybe when I was a little older. Yeah, cauliflower is awesome. My mother loves cauliflower.
You kind of have to get over the gassy vegetable thing.
Yeah, well, that was for me too. Growing up, all the smells in the house, and I mean, I'm just obviously have heightened senses and always have, and they're obviously much more so now that I've been cooking for so long. But
are you trying to say that you're sensitive?
I'm, yes, very sensitive. But the sense of smell thing is you know, broccoli, cauliflower, Brussels sprouts, all those things, bleh. But yeah, no, I love cauliflower. And I think with cauliflower too, you have to cook it right. It needs to be cooked in highly salted water. Always wash it well. Flies actually kind of hide in there. I don't know why it is, but you know, you just don't want any bugs in there, obviously. So
if you don't cook it correctly, it's dull and smelly.
Oh gosh, yeah.
And that's not what you want.
I mean,
for
it can be spectacular. I make a cauliflower puree where we highly salted water, big pot of water, and cut it into large florets. You don't have to break it down very much. And what you want to do is you want to cook it until it's just tender, not al dente. You don't want it to be firm because you want it to have some texture, but not al dente. That's too undercooked. So we boil it in the salted water. It probably takes, I would say, about 5 minutes, 4 to 5 minutes. And then shock it in ice water, stop the cooking process. And then we break it up. I actually just break it up at that point in a bowl with my hands. And then I put it into a food processor and just pulse it for a few seconds just to break it up into small pieces. And then I put it back in the original pot rather than washing the pot again. There's no reason not to. It just had the boiling cauliflower water in it. Empty that out, obviously. Melt butter in the bottom of it. Add the cauliflower. And I add a little bit of fresh lemon juice, salt, a good bit of salt and pepper, and just a tiny bit of Dijon mustard. But the more butter, obviously, the better. I'm sorry, I didn't say it was healthy.
I am shocked.
It's so good. And I serve it with pan roasted sea scallops. So
no potato at all.
Oh, no, 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 no.
Ooh,
oh, no, it's all cauliflower,
that's hardcore.
Man. Oh, my gosh, it's so good. I could eat a bowl of that stuff.
So often when you get a vegetable puree, people, they kind of always cheat a little bit with potato.
No, and the cool thing is that it has texture. And that's extremely important when I'm training the cooks how to make it. It's extremely important to me that still has a good amount of texture without being undercooked feeling. So there's a fine line between overcooked and like puree into oblivion, soft, like looking like potato puree, and having body and texture. And it really is. And cauliflower is so good with scallops. The flavors are perfect for each other.
Well, they oppose each other strongly, and contrast is nice. All right, what else you got?
Beets, which I also used to hate. I mean, it's just so funny.
I recall when you hated beets.
Uh-huh. And now, oh my gosh. So we roast beets in their skins with a little salt and corn oil. We used to do it in a salt bed, but we don't actually do that anymore. It's very simple. We use a 2-inch hotel pan, which is a long metal pan, like I said. You wash the beets first, obviously, but then rub them with corn oil, salt, and we do put a little bit of pepper on and roast them. It take forever to roast. It's a couple of hours at 300 degrees with foil on top of the pan, and they do steam themselves in the end.
People
steam roast.
It's hard to spot when they're done. They're a little wilty looking when they're done.
Yeah, yes, and obviously you want to just insert a fork or a little paring knife and just see that they are tender through, and then we let them steam a little bit with a plastic wrap on top of that. We take the foil off, put plastic wrap on, and then you can use a kitchen towel or anything that you're not concerned with, and just rub the skins off.
Anything that can take the beet stains.
Right. And take the skins off, rub the skins off.
You do while it's warm.
We do while it's warm. And so as hot as you can handle it, that's best. And then, you know, from there, you can do a million things with those.
All right. Before we have to take a break, give me one more quick vegetable on your list.
English peas. So sexy. I love English peas. How about you?
I don't think of them as sexy, but they are on my list. So, English pea advice?
Oh.
Not be frozen, not be from a can.
Oh, gosh, no. No, you're shucking them.
Be out of the husk.
Yeah, right. Shucking them. No, just highly salted, lots of water. It's a green vegetable. So
I mean, we're in the pea time of year.
Oh, gosh, yeah. So a big pot, like I said, lots of water. I'll say it again, lots of salt. And yeah, just go in with boiling water and let them cook as fast as possible. Let them cook about a minute or less, and immediately drain them, immediately shock them in ice so they stop cooking. And now they're ready to be, had, you know, do what you want. I actually pulled my first lettuce from my garden last night, yesterday morning, excuse me. And red leaf, some speckled lettuce, really nice. Some a little bit spicy, but mostly tender, sweet lettuce. And I really wanted to make a salad with goat cheese and those peas and a tarragon vinaigrette and the lettuces. I went in a different direction, but
That
yum.
Happens.
Yes.
So when we come back, we're going to move on from the sexy peas a little further into your list. I may get a few words in edgewise to give a list. I will likely use much less butter with my vegetables than you. And then we'll move on to the third segment where you pre-prepared a chef's challenge.
I did. I wrote it in the vehicle before I got here. It's ready to go.
Hopefully not while driving.
No, actually, I wrote it at my house. I wrote it at the farm this morning. Yeah, I was looking through some. I'll give you a hint. I was looking through Italian cookbooks this morning. Actually, a Nona book. Well, I thought you would like that.
That's so okay.
Actually, I was.
I love Nonas.
I know. Me too.
All right. Well, all of that and more when we come back on Formidable from Food and Wine. Welcome back to Foreman and Wolf on Food and Wine. I'm Tony Foreman.
And Chef Cindy Wolf.
And we're talking about vegetables.
All kinds of vegetables.
I said it kind of in a depressing way, but...
They're not.
We're excited. Even Cindy's become excited over the years.
Hey, let's talk about chimichurri again. We had mentioned chimichurri with, you said, on corn, on grilled corn.
Well, I mean, that's... Chimichurri, there's usually three parts. And I know you practice a recipe that's very different from the one that I mm-hmm. prefer. And people can look up exact recipes on things.
Sure.
So there are kind of three big categories of stuff that are variable. I prefer, you know, limited chili, limited onion, lots and lots of cilantro, probably 5 parts cilantro to 3 parts parsley to 1 part basil, and a little bit of chive mm-hmm. for that.
Okay.
And the vinegar, I'd like to use red wine vinegar for that. And then... The oil, I use good olive oil, but not extra virgin olive oil, not as strong a flavor as that. So how does yours go?
Well, I've always made the chimichurri the way my chef Marcelo Vasquez made it. He would always use ripe tomatoes and do a small dice, and it always had shallot, garlic, and the garlic would be minimal. The shallot would be a pretty good amount, finely chopped. He used... Again, a mild, not an extra virgin, but an olive oil, same thing. If you use extra virgin, it's just too strong, typically. He always put raspberry vinegar in, which I know definitely is not typical. And then he always said it has to be more green than red. You know, I remember the first time I ever made it, and we made it right into we were in Charleston, South Carolina, and his restaurant, it was called Morton's, and it was in the Vendue Inn.
Did you say vinegar?
I said raspberry vinegar.
Raspberry vinegar,
yeah.
That's right.
And we would make it right into a local crab cup, you know. I can just see him teaching me how to make it now. And lots of Italian flat leaf parsley, a little bit of basil, and a pinch of fresh thyme. So parsley, basil, thyme, all fresh herbs, tomato, oil in the form of olive oil, not extra virgin, raspberry vinegar, and the garlic and shallot, and salt and pepper. No pepper. He never put pepper in. It was always just salt. And he
and no chilies.
No. And that was the way, and I will never forget when Marcelo and Penny moved the restaurant from Charleston, South Carolina to Knoxville, Tennessee after the hurricane in 1989. And I will never forget because he asked me to be the chef of the restaurant. He wanted to move out front and be the restaurateur and manager out front. So I had just walked out from the kitchen and a guest was at the bar and he was saying, "You don't know how to make chimichurri." And Marcelo was standing there and I just looked at, you know, my chef and Marcelo started to talk and I said, but he taught me how to make it. You know, he's from Argentina. What do you mean? And he said, it's not supposed to have tomato in it. And so then he and Marcelo started talking. But there are many versions
of
chimichurri. Yeah, there are many versions. I mean, I've been to Argentina, and I remember the first time I had chimichurri, it was all dried herbs. And that really surprised me. I mean, it was just like a ton of oregano and oil. And, you know, I don't remember there even being onion product in there. I mean, it just felt like it was all dried herbs. And I was very surprised by that. But, yeah, there's a whole bunch of different versions.
There's even a version... up further up north in the country that has a little bit of raisins in it.
Oh, wow. I've never heard of that. Yeah. Now when I make it, I don't use the raspberry vinegar anymore because I find it to be inappropriate. And, you have to also recognize that I'm talking about something that I learned how to make in the 1980s. So in the 1980s, raspberry vinegar was very exotic. I mean, that was just like a new thing.
It was a thing.
Yeah, it was a big new thing. So
to get a salad of baby greens with raspberry vinaigrette.
Yeah, that was pretty fancy.
That was pretty shishy.
Yeah, right. Yeah. So now when I make it predominantly with parsley, a little bit of basil. I don't put any thyme in it. I am not big on fresh thyme anymore.
I like it for roasting mushrooms.
Yeah, certain
I like
things,
it for roasting
and
birds.
It's got to be very little. Yeah. I mean, I like thyme, but I just don't use a lot of it anymore. And so a lot of green flatleaf parsley, like I said, some basil. We put chives in now. Again, we use 50% corn oil and 50% extra virgin olive oil. So we get a good flavor from the oil, but it's not overwhelming. And then a good amount of shallot, a tiny bit of garlic, and I usually do salt and pepper now, and a little bit of lime juice. Because that's appropriate for what we're using it for.
That's the thing with chimichurri. You adapt it to your taste. That's why there's so many different recipes and to what you're cooking.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if I was having it with lamb or with goat, I would make it spicier. I would make it more garlicky.
Exactly.
If I'm having it with beef, then I'd make something like I talked about. If I'm having it with fish, I've made an arugula chimichurri for salmon where you just replace all the herbs with really spicy fresh arugula, and it's great. Takes on the fattiness of the fish.
That sounds good. That's great. Yeah.
Anyway, let's get back to vegetables.
Okay. So what's your next favorite vegetable?
So on my list, I made a list to cook and I made a list to eat. So to cook, tomatoes, peppers, eggplants.
Wait, tomatoes?
Yeah.
Our fruit.
Shh.
Unbelievable.
Shh. I've been getting away with that as a vegetable for a long time.
I don't even believe you. Okay. All right. So now we're doing my grandmother, our favorite fruits and vegetables.
No, hang on now.
I can't believe you said my tomatoes. Yes.
Well, a zucchini is a fruit of a plant, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, hey. So my grandmother, I recall her saying that the tomato was, it's a red vegetable instead of a green vegetable.
I like that.
So let's see, what else is on my list? Asparagus, of course.
Mm.
Corn. Carrots, autumn squash, summer squash, baby bok choy, which I have an unreasonable looks so cool on the plate. Chickpeas, and any kind of olives.
Mm.
That's to cook, but to eat, I've got a few variations. Any kind of beans, favas, peas, chickpeas, flageolet.
I agree with that.
Keep name just
those vegetables?
The texture, lima beans. Oh, for God's sake.
All right. Well, I don't know.
They're legumes.
Okay. All right.
Some of them are greenish, so I'm going to take that as a...
Well, I did put fava beans on my list, but I hesitated.
Enough people dislike lima beans.
Oh, gosh.
Or think they dislike lima beans.
Lima beans are
that
so
it must
good.
Be a green vegetable.
All right.
Okay. Potatoes on my list to eat. Are you going to tell me that's not a vegetable now?
So what do you...
Isn't that a root vegetable?
What do you like to do with the squashes?
Well, the autumn squashes, in studying a lot of the Argentine stuff, there's some really cool things. We took a lot of this last year. One of the best was taking a lot of the goat entrails, a lot of the organ meats from the goat, and making a force meat with that, and almost like a Halloween haggis, let's say, where you make a force meat with that and some of the breast meat from the goat and some of the lots of garlic. And the squash, it's a pumpkin that you use,
mm-hmm.
and like a nice sweet stuffing pumpkin, or one of the big long yellow banana pumpkins, which is kind of crazy because they're like 35 pounds. And we stuffed one of those guys for an event.
That's fun.
And and just served that meat. It was as something almost like...
So the force meat in the pumpkin or the squash.
You know, like ashi parmentier, mm-hmm. where you serve potato puree on top of braised beef. Mm-hmm. Or braise something.
Okay.
So this is essentially, goat roasted in the pumpkin, when then you serve it with a puree of the pumpkin with that. It's pretty great.
Yes, sounds like it.
But summer squash is just great to grill in a million different ways. Thin, thick, doesn't matter. Just have to pay attention to it. And and not let it flare up on the grill, because then it destroys the flavor.
That's the biggest thing with grilling, is not letting it flare up, making sure the grill is clean, you know, that's brushed on well, that you've oiled it well, and let the smoke blow off a little bit before you put the product on, and that you haven't over-oiled your product, because then
it'll flame
up as well. People
often grill think it's going to be like an immediate, fast thing, and it's not usually a fast cooking method.
And there's an art to grilling. There really is, to doing it well.
It is its own rhythm. Mm-hmm. It's like working sauté.
Right.
Cooking in a pan is its own rhythm. Fresh celery, when I can get fresh celery.
I love celery. Yeah.
Love to cook it. Love the
aroma. Oh, my gosh, the local celery.
The aroma.
So good. I love to make soup with it.
Yeah, that, like poached cold chicken and a little salad with fresh celery. Oh, my gosh. Cucumbers. Love to eat. That's also fruit. You're making the fruit face. All right. And then strong greens. You know, I like really spicy arugula, dandelion. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to say kale because I'm not young enough. radish greens, beet greens, a lot of the stronger greens.
They have tremendous flavor. Super good for you.
Yeah. So that's the stuff. And radishes. That's the stuff on my list.
Okay. Well, Bob Wolf would have liked you for that. He loved radishes. Radishes and spring onions. Those were his favorite things to
spring
eat as a
snack.
Spring onions
are not on my list. They're
my
great
gosh.
This year,
yeah,
but they're not on my list.
Yeah, he would just put salt on, and he loved them. I hated onions when I was a kid, and I was just astonished that he could just bite right into a spring onion.
But
he also liked onion sandwiches.
I've seen guys make the red onion.
Butter.
Like salami red onion sandwich.
White bread.
That's a lot.
Big old slice of onion.
Yeah,
yep.
That's... Is an onion a vegetable?
So I like carrots, too. So I think, you know, every time I go into the walk-in, we have peeled carrots in there. I'm going to eat one. I mean, I just love carrots.
People often don't do work with carrots, though. You know, like make a carrot puree that's excellent.
Mm-hmm.
People
make two different carrot purees. The one with the one with the passion fruit puree in it and a little bit of fresh orange juice. We cook the carrots in water with a little bit of salt and sugar. And once they're done, then we puree them in a blender with a little butter. A little bit of cream, a tiny bit of passion fruit puree, and salt, sugar, and pepper. And it's so good. But we also make one with curry, which has honey and...
That's the one that I recall
pepper.
And that I love.
That's the one that goes through the food mill, too. So it has such a different texture. The one with the passion fruit we put with the seared foie gras and a piece of turbo. And those three things together, they make a really amazing combination of flavors. But, yeah, the one that goes through the food mill has, obviously a very different texture. And that little bit of curry in there is really good.
Well, the one with the curry, that's now, do you use dairy in that?
Oh, just a tiny bit of butter, no cream.
The one with the curry, I can imagine going with an awful lot of different grilled meats.
It does.
Whether it's lamb or pork.
Mm-hmm. Pretty much it goes with everything. But lamb and pork are the best, actually.
Yeah, the things that want the strong flavor of the curry.
You know, and one time I had to make a vegan soup on the fly at the restaurant. And obviously we have these great sweet carrots in the walk-in. So we made it with water, a little bit of Tabasco. We did saute onion and corn oil, a little bit of shallot, and added curry to that, and a little bit of saffron. Actually, we put a lot of Tabasco in, and salt and pepper. And I was shocked at how good that soup was. It was just, it was really vibrant. And, of course, the color was amazing. And it was just very vibrant, as I said. It was super, super cool, actually.
Tell you what I love on my list to eat. Whatever kind of fresh bean. One of the things is people get beans out of cans. They get dried beans you can work with, and you get a decent result. But when you get fresh beans in season, there's nothing like that.
They really are amazing.
It's the texture. It's not gotten entirely starchy yet. And that's whether
they don't take as long to cook.
Whether it's fresh peas. But
obviously.
Like lima beans, a nice piece of roasted fish with crispy skin, with lima beans, a little bit of sweet onion. You know, imagine essentially making a dressing with corn, lima beans, lots of, it could be green onion or red onion, something like that. That's just been sweated a tiny bit to take a little bit of the heat out of it. Good vinegar. And then dress the fish with that. And then give it a little bit of, like, really decadent extra virgin olive oil. That, whether a piece of rockfish, a piece of grouper,
mm-hmm.
that's a nice... I have another supper.
I have another one. We used to do a dish with rockfish or grouper or turbo that had, you were bringing us speckled butter beans.
Mm-hmm.
Oh my gosh, so good. And we had white peaches. They were in at the same time. And those two things, the white peaches or white nectarines, I don't remember. I think it was white peaches. But with the beans and lobster pieces and butter and just a little bit of fresh herbs, I think we put tarragon on the plate. That was really pretty too. So that's another nice way to recall
the dish. Was that a hot dish?
Yes. Yeah.
So the lobster was hot. Yeah. The beans were hot.
Yes. And then the peaches were just, we would either have them room temperature with a little bit of acidity already sliced, ready to go onto the plate, or we would grill them. And that was also nice.
The grilled,
yeah.
Okay. Now when you say
peaches,
grilled peaches, I remember
we did
that
more often than not. Yeah. But the lima beans or butter beans or whatever they were just, oh my gosh.
The speckled butter beans.
So good with everything on the plate.
Yeah, no, that's a big favorite.
Fava beans are absolutely my favorite. I think that might be my favorite thing to eat, really, truly.
It's no one's favorite thing to prepare.
Well, you know what's funny, too?
I like to cook them, but it's almost because it was therapeutic to have to take two shells off the God-blessed things.
Well, and the funny thing is that time we were in Spain and tasting with Pepe, and we were out on there, you know, overlooking the vineyards, and we were eating raw fava beans with salt on. I had never thought that was something you did. And, oh, my gosh, those were so good. And they were tiny. And then we had that dish.
Kind of like peanuts.
Oh, they were so – yes, exactly. We had a dish with fava beans there that was one of the best things I've ever eaten for lunch. Yeah.
He was all excited because they just come in the spring.
But talk about a ton of work. They are.
Yeah.
I mean, first you have to take them out of their, you know, their pod, and then you can either peel them before you blanch them, or they're much easier to peel after you blanch them.
I love favas. Let's get back to favas when we get into the next segment.
Okay.
The next segment we'll have favas, a few more therapeutic vegetables. And you, I know, prepared a chef challenge, didn't you?
Yeah.
You prepared it days and days ago.
No.
Just this morning.
Just
very calculated.
Me and my Nona cookbook.
Okay. All right, all of that and more on Formula Wolf on Food and Wine when we return on WYPR. Welcome back to Formula Wolf on Food and Wine. I'm Tony Foreman.
And Chef Cindy Wolf.
I know that you had something else you wanted to say about fava beans. We're talking about vegetables. So what else did you want to say about fava beans?
One day I'm going to make fava bean soup, which I've actually probably made once, but I want to make it again.
But is it worth it?
I know.
That's the
thing. And I think the big question is, can you put the fava bean in the shell in the soup? And you can't. That's the problem. There's no way.
No.
Well, you think, could probably do that and puree it, but
same as you could puree corn in the husk.
No, I mean with the skin still on.
I know.
Oh, all right. Okay. So anyway, one of my favorite hors d'oeuvres that we've made is fava bean bruschetta, and just, you know, blanch the favas, chop them by hand pretty fine, and mix them with goat cheese, a little bit of fresh lemon juice, a tiny bit of extra virgin olive oil, and salt and pepper, and make a quenelle, spoon it onto bruschetta or put it in a bowl and let people help themselves to toast points. But, oh, my goodness.
Almost like a dip.
Yeah. That is one of my favorite things. Super
good.
Gotta
love a dip.
Apparently. Okay.
And sandwiches.
Yes.
Do you love sandwiches?
You do.
No, I
love
sandwiches.
You love sandwiches. Yes.
I was thinking about how much I love to sneak vegetables into sandwiches because I have a little kid. And I've taught her to love a turkey sandwich with thin slices of cucumber.
Oh, good.
In there. Mm-hmm. Thin slices of cucumber and tomato sometimes.
Uh-huh.
I'm a tricky guy. But I made it, but she can only eat half a sandwich. So I ate the other half. I was like, this is great. I've never had a crunchy turkey sandwich before.
There you go.
I should have come up with this innovation a long time ago.
You're so innovative. So this other thing that I like, vegetable-wise, are artichokes.
Wow.
Blowing right by that.
You love to cook artichokes? Wow.
I love to eat artichokes.
Yeah.
Love artichokes.
You're talking about like the old-fashioned, you know, drawn butter and you sort of basically use your teeth to scrape the artichokes?
That's kind of fun. I haven't eaten that in a long, long time. But
I don't think that that's very fun.
Yeah, that was so, again, talk about the 1970s and 1980s. That was very, very popular back in the day. Probably the 60s, too, for that matter. But
I mean, you still see it in Italy probably more than anywhere else, but, you know, not so much in the States.
No, but there are a million things you can do with all, you know, the bottom or the stem or the heart. And, you know, you can make salads or
serve
it with rockfish or whatever. Yeah, well, that's, I use the bottoms for a lot of things. We make a vegetable plate with the carrot puree that we talked about with curry and roasted cipollini onions.
Don't you make a vegetable course with artichokes?
Yes, and the carrot puree that we talked about with the curry is one of the components on the plate, and roasted cipollini onions. And we put a little bit of beurre blanc on, which is just absolutely perfect because beurre blanc is a reduction of white wine and shallots. It can have bay leaf and peppercorn in it as long as you strain it out, and it's melted with butter.
Oh, shock.
And it's just... You're just waiting to say that. And
it's not, it's just... butter's not just added. It's mounted. Sorry.
It's so good. It's, but yeah, artichoke. And you know, when you use
the
bottoms,
it's the cardiologist
like that,
in me that comes out.
You're
when
not
you
a cardiologist.
No.
You just think you are.
Yes, I do.
Yes. And so the bottom can also be used like to sit things in, you know, for lack of a more interesting culinary term. I mean, you could put crab meat in there and roast it in the oven. Maybe a little bit of crab meat mixed with fresh basil and lemon and mayonnaise and a tiny bit of breadcrumb, and that'd be really, really, really good.
Maybe that corn and bean mixture with a little bit of sweated onion that I was talking about earlier.
That would be good. There are a lot of things you can do with artichokes. What about wine with all these wonderful vegetables? I mean, I bet artichokes are tricky.
Artichokes are super tricky.
And asparagus. I know you always talk about asparagus being
Asparagus, it goes like this. There's one thing that's good, a few things that are neutral, and an enormous amount that's horrible.
Okay.
Asparagus have a very particular and strong flavor. What's good is Suave Classico.
Okay.
Suave, it can be fantastic. There are a number of excellent growers. Gini is one of them, G-I-N-I. Piropan, P-I-E-R-O-P-A-N, Piropan. You know, that Pra, P-R-A, easiest one to spell.
Yep, that's a good one.
but there are a lot of excellent growers. Their styles are all a little bit different. Once upon a time in Suave Classico, there's a lot of junk. Right now, there are excellent things in the market. That's great for asparagus. We've just missed asparagus season, so
No, but that's for the future.
Yeah.
What about artichokes?
Wine with artichokes is tricky. You can use Suave. You can use some brighter, more fruity. One of the things about Suave is kind of built with almost like a crunchy texture. That is needed but not necessary for the artichokes the same way as it is for the asparagus. You can use Müller-Thurgau, which is pretty obscure grape, but you see good versions from the Alto Adige, and also dry versions coming out of the Mosel or the Rhine and other parts of Germany. Riesling from Austria does well. Grüneveltliner, not so much. And the weird, so like the green tea aromatic and the artichokes gets exceptionally odd.
Okay.
So Vernaccia, the San Gimignano, that does very well also, the Tuscan white.
What about with corn? That seems like that's easy.
Corn's easy. That's the American Chardonnay.
Oh.
Big, showy West Coast Chardonnay.
All right.
Corn and lobster.
Oh, yeah. Parsons.
Those are, I mean, that's just big and lavish, and it's a giant blonde hairdo is what that is. That's awesome.
what are we doing with parsnip? Like the parsnip chips. Are you having beer
parsnip
with that
chips?
Or something, maybe?
Well, I guess that depends on the dip, doesn't it?
Oh, jeez.
Did you make a spinach dip, you know? Mm-hmm. I mean... Yeah, it really kind of depends on what you're serving it with. If you're just sitting there eating parsnip chips, I mean, I would drink a glass of Grüneveltliner or something bright, something really bright and sort of crunchy.
And the cauliflower, that's probably kind of weird too.
The cauliflower, the scallop, of course. Scallops do well with Chardonnay also. Cauliflower, I would take my Chardonnay from not the West Coast, but maybe from White Burgundy. Mm-hmm. So from Burgundy, I should say. So wine from Macon, if you're on a budget, or the Côte d'Or, if you're going to go for it. But that's where I'd go with that.
Beets
are kind of tricky because they're sort of minerally. Beets are tricky for red wine. Beaujolais with beets does well, no question. Decent number of whites, but nothing as exceptional in whites. Beaujolais with beets is probably the best.
Well, that's good. Those are good things to know.
Okay, last thing about vegetables I want to know.
Okay.
What do you hate? I'm sorry. What do you not like that my daughter will yell at me for saying hate?
Can't think of anything.
I can think of two vegetables that bother me.
I can't think.
I just don't want to be served.
I can't think of anything right now. I have to admit, I really still don't like Brussels sprouts that
really?
Much. I mean, I can eat them if...
Oh.
If I make them and I know, I mean, you know,
hurt
then
my feelings.
It's a.
That didn't make the cut on my list.
I would
but
be
I really
scared
like them.
If someone else made them and served them to me. I'd be oh, like, uh-oh, oh, what's going to be happening here?
Control freak. Okay.
Yeah, well.
Brussels sprouts.
That, all right. So, what two things don't you like?
I also know you don't like turnips, but.
Oh, I like turnips. I don't like them
oh.
cooked. I love raw turnips.
Okay.
But yeah, I will. I would totally eat all some right. turnips, and I eat radishes too.
All right.
But I like them raw.
I take that back.
All right.
Rutabaga.
Yeah, not,
no. No, thanks.
Yeah, no.
I might as well be chewing a...
Yeah, no.
You know, a milk carton or something. and kohlrabi.
Oh, no.
Those two just don't...
That's not working for
I'm
me
sure
either.
That
I'm
great nutrition.
Yeah.
I'm certain that they're brilliant recipes and I'm the problem, but I'm going to stay the problem with those two vegetables. That's not it.
All right. There we go.
All right. Are you ready for your chef challenge?
Surely.
Mine is an ill-prepared, really random one.
Oh,
I
good.
Hope that you enjoy it.
I can't
it.
Wait. All right. Oh, the first ingredient are sexy peas. Okay, so
you
there
got
we
it.
Go. Cauliflower, rockfish,
gotta
bacon.
Have sexy peas.
Bacon, potatoes, chicken, mint, sweet potato, salami, celery, lemons, limes. It sort of sounds like I was saying allegedly salami there. Spice cabinet and sweet pickled chilies. All right, so... First, got to work with that chicken.
No, the chicken, you can do whatever you'd like to do with it.
Well, thank you, Tony.
It can be thighs. It can be breasts.
Well,
it can be
pick whatever
a whole
cut.
Bird.
Okay.
It could be wings.
I like a whole bird. I like the idea of that. I'm going to slice a couple of the lemons and put them in the cavity. And
And I've given you no onion product, so please, you've got
really
garlic
nice.
And shallots.
That's
and
super nice of you.
Spanish onion.
Oh, I do have that?
Yes, you
oh,
do.
Oh, good. All right. So in the cavity, I'm going to put the lemons and celery, and now that you've given me onions, I'm going to put some onion in the cavity, and I'm going to rub it with salt and pepper and a little bit of corn oil and nothing else. So that's going to start roasting, and I'm going to boil the cauliflower. So I'll cut it into – actually, I'm going to slice the cauliflower. Cut it into small pieces and slice it and put a pot of water on with salt and get that going and boil my cauliflower. I'm going to dice with the bacon, brown it off in a pan, say reserve the fat and set that aside. And once the cauliflower is done, the potatoes are going to boil. So do I get to pick whatever kind of potatoes they are?
Yeah.
I'm going to go with Russian fingerling potatoes. So I'm going to leave the skin on them. I'm going to slice them lengthwise. Oftentimes you can cut them literally just in half lengthwise. So those will also get into salted water and get blanched off. And what's going to happen is I'm going to make a salad with the cauliflower, the potatoes, the bacon, and I'm going to blanch off the sexy peas. That's so weird. And and I'm going to add those once they're shocked and cooled down and drained to the salad as well. All right, so we have potatoes, bacon, cauliflower, the peas, and that potato I'm going to peel and thinly slice, and I'm going to use a Yukon Gold instead. And I'm going to thinly slice it, and I'm going to brown it off in the bacon fat. That's going to become the whole thing. So bacon, crispy bacon, a little bacon fat, the thinly sliced brown potatoes.
I was wondering why you were being so restrained.
The cauliflower and the peas, right. That's going to be the accompaniment for the chicken. No, sweet potato. So the sweet potato is going to be for the rockfish. And I'm going to roast the whole side of rockfish, which I'm assuming that's what it is, in the oven with, so now I have the limes to use. Limes, salt and pepper, a little bit of good olive oil mixed with corn oil, and roast that. And meanwhile, I'm going to be roasting potatoes in their jackets ahead of time.
You got more potatoes.
Yeah, more potatoes. So once the potatoes are really tender, I'm going to take the meat out of the inside of the potato, and I'm going to mix it with some of the sweet pickled chilies and a little bit more of the lime juice. And you don't have butter on here?
You have butter and extra virgin olive oil.
A tiny little bit of butter.
You already appropriated the extra virgin olive oil.
All right, so that's going to be underneath. That's going to like lay down as a bed on the center of the plate, and the rockfish is going to sit on top of that. It's rather strange. And I didn't use a mint. That's it.
You can put mint in your iced tea.
That's it. All right.
All
Here's
right.
yours.
Let's see. Baby potatoes. It's a baby. Lemon, chives, polenta, four whole rabbits. Marjoram, garlic, shallot, onion, extra virgin olive oil, butter, salt, pepper, mill, spinach, Reggiano, dandelion greens, grock, also known as stock, leeks, eggs, squash blossoms, cake flour. I know what you want me to do. The question is, will I do it?
You can do whatever you want.
Like with the beer can chicken, I struggled with doing as directed. All right, the rabbits, I want the rabbits with polenta. I mean, that's the first and overriding thing, and I really could care almost not at all about anything else. Nice slow-cooked polenta. And those, the rabbits, if I could cook them anyway, I would use the marjoram and the garlic and olive oil and a little bit of, if there's vinegar somewhere around, mm-hmm. and season them really well and let them sit out long enough to get to room temperature. And then I would have a fire, almost like a campfire, and I would tie these guys on a string, and I roast those four guys all alificel, you know, on the string.
Yeah, good.
When they cool down after roasting, then I would pick all the meat, and I would take the livers as well. Just leave all the organs on the animal, take the livers as well, and crush up the livers and cook that with onion, and all the meat cook in that. And you're gonna have to add fat to it, whether that's butter. The rabbit's pretty mild, so maybe either butter or pork fat's what you want. But I would cook that, and that's what you get nice and crispy. It's a fricassea that you serve on top of the polenta. That would be great. What else? I really don't want anything else. The salad with the spinach and the dandelion greens is pretty reasonable, with little shaved leeks. You could pickle the leeks a little bit. That'd be fun to have with those guys. I'm not going to use the cake flour. I'm not going to do that, the eggs and the cake flour. I'm going to keep it lighter. It's really just a salad I want to serve with that. So the baby potatoes, I'm a bad sport. I'm going to save the baby potatoes. No, you could just, there is a potato salad that I love with lots of lemon and chives. Basically, you know, you cook these guys in salted water, slice them, once they've cooled down a little bit, slice them in the skins, a little warm, and dress them with a lot of lemon, extra virgin olive oil, lots of black pepper, and very good oil. And that's a nice thing, but it's a little bit repetitive with polenta. That would be good, maybe for a different day. And the squash blossoms I want as part of that salad, and a lot of Reggiano, big curls of Reggiano. And the dressing, I don't have that much to play with. Using garlic and Reggiano again for the dressing, mm-hmm. you know, with... Mm-hmm. You'd have to cut that extra virgin olive oil with corn oil or something so it wasn't too strong. But I really wish I had black olives for that salad.
I almost put olives on there.
Yeah.
Yep. Oh. All right.
That was a great challenge. I loved all the stuff that you gave me.
Good. Yeah, it was fun.
But one starch per meal, balanced meals like Mother Wolf. That's all we have time for, Cindy.
Okay, Tony.
So if you want to download this program or any other episodes, go to the WYPR website, wypr.org. Look up the Foreman Wolf page, and you'll see all the podcasts that are listed there. If you'd like to correspond with us, send us an email, foremanwolf@wypr.org. If you want to follow social media, I'm the real Tony Foreman on Instagram, and you are?
You can follow me as Chef Wolf on Instagram and as Chef Cindy Wolf on Twitter.
Thanks so much for listening.
Happy Sunday.